All right, lots of you messaging in, as you can imagine. We're going to take a break from those calls in a moment just to answer all your gardening questions, so stay right where you are. But just I want to get to some of these comments. Why aren't people going straight into Out in the Gelfen? My mother was seen in 15 minutes with no weight. I'm not really quite sure how that works, to be honest with you. Not the less of a weight, just going to that hospital instead. Letterkenny Hospital is a pure nightmare, Greg, and has been ignored long enough. An investigation needs to be done on how bad this is. The poor nurses are just so under pressure they can't cope. That woman in the ED, Mary, that is, it's a ridiculous system, they say. Hi, Greg. We unfortunately had to attend Letterkenny ED yesterday with a 15-year-old. We waited over 15 and a half hours. It was excruciating. Staff could not believe how busy it was. No human should have to go through that. And there's a couple of other things on different topics there. Here we go. We need to grill these TDs in hospital management and ask the hard questions. We are paying taxes for this treatment. What service do we get in return? It's a disgrace. And last for now, I'm a farmer and I can get a lamb seen to 24/7 for x-rays. It's unbelievable. Big changes need to get underway, they say. Yeah, indeed. And that's the care of an animal, not necessarily the care of a human. All right, let's pivot a little away from those issues, which we will return to, by the way, and welcome into studio now Paul McLaughlin from Ballacdur Garden Centre. Good morning to you, Paul.
Hey, Greg.
Good to have you in. What's the story?
Story is, it'll be a wee bit colder today than it had been for a few days. We're kind of spoiled for a while there, but...
Yeah, indeed, but the weather, temperature-wise and what have you, is going to pick up again as we head into next week. And I read in the papers today, they're predicting an El Nino might have a really positive impact, if you like hot weather, on our weather. But anyway, you know.
Yeah, well, we'll take it if we get it.
Paper doesn't refuse ink either, though, so exactly. I don't know how true it is.
As soon as the beast from the east always coming every winter.
Oh, that's it. I presume the a bit of moisture around and a slightly warmer temperature is good for growth, though. It sounds like it's...
Very much it would be. Growth's quite slow at the minute. The temperature over sort of the late spring has been quite low for the time of year, so growth has been a bit slow, but hopefully a wee bit of moisture now and a bit of heat, everything should kick off nicely.
Yeah, indeed. Right, okay, so people have been getting out. I think the first cuts, a lot of people, if they're lucky enough to have a bit of grass, they've got out and got their first cuts. It's all safe in that regard, isn't it?
Yes,
There's no risk of frost or anything.
No, there'll be no frosted grass, any harm or anything like that there, if you know what I mean. So now, I think at this stage, most of the danger of frost has passed.
All right, so there is a possibility, though, that people are lulled into some sort of false sense of the weather in that it hasn't necessarily been glorious, but it hasn't been very wet either. So, you know, what do we need to make sure we're ensuring gets enough water at this time of year?
Yes, pretty much anything in pots at the moment. Anything you've established new this year, say anything you planted over the spring or even late last year, back in the autumn time, just take a wee look at it and see if it requires water. If you think, and if you're in any doubt if it's in the ground, throw a half a bucket on it, it'll do it no harm. But definitely potted plants, especially stuff like people have the boxes of that at the front door. It's been quite dry, and it's actually the wind at the minute is quite drying, so it's definitely worth throwing a wee bit on them.
How do you properly water these plants then? You know, I mean, let's get back to the first time you ever walked through this door, the type of question I might ask.
But yes,
you know, you talk about the drying weather, it's drying the top of the soil, is it? When you're watering your plants, what's the most effective way to water them? Where do you put the water?
Just basically on top of the soil.
Yeah.
Depending on what you have. If you have someone's particularly flowery, it's better just to do on top of the soil, because if you actually moisten the flowers, they'll tend to drop off a bit earlier. Yeah. So generally a couple of times a week on a potted plant, say at the front of the front of the house there, a couple of times a week, give it a good soaking. And once your pot has good drainage, you can't really overwater. In the sense that the excess water, the plant will take what it needs and the rest will drain away.
Yeah, okay.
So it's better to err on the side of too much than too little.
Yeah, I think a lot of people out there, if they did mow a bit of land that they might have, will have found it riddled with moss.
Yes.
Depending on where it is.
Yes, moss has been a huge problem this year, all right. So it has. Generally, once again, a good rake and a good scarifying this time of year would help remove it. And if you do remove moss, or especially a big area of moss, it's important to overseed it with grass seed. Because the actual, if you don't recolonize it with the grass, it's just an open area for the moss to come back in again.
Okay, so then let's talk about how you properly seed it then.
Yeah, generally if you're using a machine such as a scarifier or something, it's cutting channels in the soil as it is, so that will have roughened up the surface
and
nicely.
It will look quite shocking to begin with.
It can do all right, yeah. So it can look very sort of bare and butchered for a wee while. But it's 2 weeks, it'll be back to itself again, hopefully better than ever.
So just throw the seed down, mix it with a bit of sand, a bit of peat. What's
pretty much a bit of compost, bit of seed. It's not so much that the nutrients will be in the ground to grow it, but the peat and the sand keeps it moister. So it's just if you get a dry period, then the seed doesn't actually dry out and scorch.
And you just sprinkle it. You don't have to compact it or anything.
No, just sprinkle it on the top. Perfect.
And in terms of matching, right? Now, pardon my ignorance on this. I presume all grass is green, is it?
Yes.
So you doesn't like right. You're not going to find yourself getting a different breed of grass that's going to look like a big green patch rather than a.
It can happen. All right. Generally, you have grass seed and you have lawn seed. Lawn seed comes in three grades. You have number one, which is more or less bowling green. Mm-hmm. Number two would be the most common, which is sort of a nice lawn. And number three then would be sort of rougher version on grass seed, like a farmer would use. So generally, farmers go for species of grass that will be thicker in the blade, so you get more bulk for silage or hay.
Yeah, of course. Sorry.
So, and if you use that on a garden, you'd be sick of mowing it, basically.
How do you know whether or not at this time of year that your lawn needs feeding?
Generally, if you're going to be taken out, I'd sort of assume at this stage that it probably does, unless it's a lush green bowling green, if you know what I mean. But the notion would be sort of assume that you do. If you're in any doubt, take a couple of pictures, drop into your local garden centre, and they'll be able to advise you on what would be best.
Right, I think the last time you were in, we were expecting a bit of frost in the coming days, and there was some warnings about gardeners not being too keen in planting. So what's the story now with bedding plants?
I would cautiously say you're good to go.
Yeah.
I would definitely say that last night. Today, it's a slightly different story. The fact that the wind's picked up a good bit, if you were to put baskets out with tender plants in them, it would actually, there'd be in slight danger. You better keeping them a wee bit sheltered. Mm. But for the most part, for the danger of frost to be grand, the only sort of caveat I would put on that would be the marigolds or cosmos, sort of African-based plants like that would be particularly frost.
They'd want a few more degrees at night to be.
To be confident of them now. But if you have like sort of first communion season, people have weddings going up. So I would, if you have an occasion coming up, I would certainly put out the baskets. But if you can afford to wait, waiting a week at this time of year could actually stretch your plants almost a month at the back end.
Right,
of the year.
So these, when we talk about potted plants, sorry to rehash old questions, we are talking, that's window boxes, hanging baskets as well, isn't it? Right, okay. Right, fruit trees.
Fruit trees, yes, hugely popular at the moment. Since COVID, they've actually been hugely popular.
Right.
That's, they've sort of had a re-emergence of them, if you know
so
what I mean.
So we have apples in the apocalypse, is that the...
Pretty much, okay. Your apples and your cherries and stuff like that. But now, fruit trees, the climate in Donegal is particularly suited to growing fruit trees. They tend to do very well. So they do. So actually your apples, cherries, plums, and pears. Pears can be easy to grow, but they can be quite hard to get to ripen because we don't have the correct degree of sunshine. But they're trees for the garden. Even if you have a small garden, they're a great tree for that because you get blossoms at this time of year and you have the benefit of getting the fruit at the back end of the year.
Yeah, any particular place in the garden to plant them?
Generally, no. Anywhere's kind of suitable because they are decorative enough to be like to be nice looking, even at the front of the house.
Some people have them as a centrepiece too, don't they?
Absolutely. Because like I say, you have the flowers this time of year and the fruits can actually be quite decorative almost in the autumn time too.
Yeah, so when you buy to plant a fruit tree, what are you actually buying? How mature is it?
Generally, the ones we would sell down there, you'd be chatting, it'll probably be 3-4 years old and it'll be like 5 feet, around that. Sort of 5-6 feet, depending on the variety. And you will get fruit on, because they're grafted trees, you will get fruit on them the first year.
Right, okay. How long before that might mature into a what looks like an established tree?
Yeah, pretty much established tree. After about 5 years,
you should have a decent sized tree. You had me up until 5 years.
Aye, but you're constantly getting fruit all the time, so you have someone to keep your interest.
Yeah, I know. And in terms of how you, and obviously during the purchase process, the customer would be advised, but how do you plant that in your garden then?
Yeah, pretty much it'll come in a pot or a bag. Just bring it home, dig a hole sort of the same depth as the pot, but twice as wide, break up the soil nicely, add in a wee bit of fertiliser and you're good to go.
Yeah, and you know, as you say, they look good, they blossom and all, and I think too, we're always trying to get our children to eat different types of food, and if you can sort of go from the tree to the plate, to the belly.
Yes,
it always helps.
Absolutely. If you invest them in the process of growing the food, actually, it definitely does have a good effect on their consumption of it.
All right. I have lilies coming up in pots. I think there's a bug attacking them. What can I do?
Right. Generally, lilies, it could be bugs or probably more likely to be slugs. Mm-hmm. So the first thing probably to do is be vigilant. and keep it in terms of see what is attacking it, and you're going to treat it appropriately. If you want to go down the chemical route, sort of, you get organic slug pellets now. They're based on salts that dry out the slug rather than the used to be the old toxic ones. They've sort of gone off the market now. So you have that sort of lilies, I would say, is possibly slugs. Mm. If it's aphids or something like that attacking it, there are sprays you get, or you could even try the old garlic spray to try and turn them away.
How far have we, as the public, moved away from using toxic chemicals, have you found?
Generally, there definitely is more conscientiousness there in terms of not just been firing chemicals at stuff, and people are definitely looking for sort of more organic ways around it. But unfortunately, some infections in plants, like if you have a valuable plant there, unfortunately, sometimes the chemical route is the only way to go down. But you can sort of exhaust other things first.
Yeah, what about leatherback worms? This caller's lawn is run with them. Anything to get rid?
Huge problem this year. There are sprays you can get. They're more geared. Garden centres can't really sell them at the minute. They're more geared towards agriculture for crops and stuff. So if you ask in, like, say, your local farm supply shop, they should be able to advise you on sprays. If it's a small lawn, the traditional way of doing it was covered with black plastic, get up at dawn and remove the black plastic, they'll all be in the surface, and then the birds will come and do the work for you.
Mm.
But it's not foolproof by any means.
No, and it's not. It's hit and miss, presumably.
Exactly, it's very hit and miss, and you'll never get the whole population.
Yeah, what's the best way to keep a brick path clear of weeds and grass between bricks? Cheers. Now, I did see one of the discount stores, I think, as one of the yolks that...
The brush, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now, if you've got... I presume if you have sand or cement in between them, those brushes could be quite aggressive towards
them. They can be quite aggressive. The other way, generally, out the back of my house, I have a fair lock of bricks and just a power hose it once a year.
Mm.
And it's just a matter of keeping on top of the weeds then by, like you say, using one of them brushes and raking them.
Yeah.
And I would sort of, because we have a cat knocking about, I would be conscientious using too many chemicals, that sort of thing. But there is actually, if you look up on Google, can't remember the recipe now, but there is an organic weed killer you can make up is based in vinegar, Epsom salts, and fey liquid.
Yeah, and the thing with those, be it organic or otherwise, it doesn't happen straight away. There's a process that has to, it takes 2 or 3 weeks, doesn't it?
Generally, it does. Actually, if you put on some of the more chemical or Roundup or something like that there, the weed actually grows more vigorously for about 3 days. Because it's in the growing process that it brings in the product, if you know what I mean.
There you go. All right.
So it is. But no, generally, like I say, I wash it once a year and it's sort of manageable after that.
Yeah, I get you. I've got horsetail taking over my lawn. How do I tackle it?
Horsetail or mare tails generally is one of the things that, unfortunately, chemicals are pretty much the only foolproof way of going. And because they've got a very waxy coating on them, the best thing to do is get a big stick and bat them for a while, which breaks up it takes out your frustrations with them and it breaks up the surface so they don't take in the chemical.
Yeah, but and they grow quick too as well.
They grow very quick, and it's the nature of them. If you go to pull it, it just breaks off and the root's still there.
They're survivors.
They've been about since the time of the dinosaurs, I reckon.
Yeah. So it is, and you can get a chemical, it seems to be the only option. You can get one that will not damage the lawn, it just attacks them.
No, for them, it's generally it's sort of a kill all.
Really?
You know, so you'd have to sort of patch test, if you know what I mean. There used to be a very effective one for it. There was a powder based one, but that's about 5 years ago, it's been banned.
Right, okay. So that's how bad they are, okay. Does Paul agree with no mow May? I think I'll try it myself. Now, this is, I presume, to allow the dandelions and what have you know, to listen to the birds and feed the bees.
Yes, absolutely. No mow May, it's very hard to say, actually, but has become a big thing. Actually, there was a thing came out in the Post, the last day, a wee leaflet about it, actually, sort of promoting it there. But yes, if you have the sort of patience for it and have the area for it, it is a very effective way of helping along pollinators this time of year. Generally, they reckon a queen bee needs the pollen of 6,000 flowers a day this time of year to set up the colony and all that. And dandelions are one of the major sources of it.
Yeah.
So it is. So if you have the patience and are happy enough to do it, definitely it is worth doing.
But I mean, obviously for some it can look messy.
Yes.
And it can look like you're not looking after your house.
Mm-hmm.
And also too, by the time June comes around, it could be a strimmer job or a double cut, and people probably have a cheap lawn mower that's not really fit. Like, I get where people come from, and whatever we can do, we should do. But I think practically for some, it's just a non-runner. Yeah.
And suppose if everybody did something along the lines of sort of dedicate an area, if you are lucky enough to have a big garden, dedicate an area of it that you could let rewild a bit. So and yeah. could be sort of out of sight, but not everybody has that luxury, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. Something's eaten leaves off a climbing hydrangea plant. What do you do?
What would you do there? Someone like, you could try the fairy liquid in water just to try and remove it if it is, if it's doing the damage. At this time of year, the new fresh leaves coming out in the hydrangea would be quite sweet, so things will tend to attack it. So failing that, you could try your garlic spray as well to actually make it unpalatable to the things. That's just a matter of boil up a couple of cloves of garlic and use the water then to spray onto the plant.
Yeah, another listener, their daughter's lawn is getting wrecked with leather jackets.
Yes.
That's the same question effectively.
Same
isn't
thing,
it?
Yeah, a huge problem this year.
Yeah.
That's, we haven't.
What do they, other than being unsightly or icky, do they damage the lawn?
Yes, they do. They actually, you'll notice your lawn from a point just turning yellow and sort of the yellowness spreading out, and they will kill the whole lawn very quickly. So they will, they're immature daddy long legs. And what happens is about August time, they lay the eggs in the soil. And as the sort of larvae or whatever come out, they eat the roots of the grass. So your lawn could look perfect on the top, but there's no roots anymore.
Wow,
so and it just all of a sudden just dies off.
Gone. So, it's probably not practical for most people, the black bag over.
Exactly. Try some of the agricultural stores. They have sprays for it.
Yeah.
So they do.
Right, okay. They'll be busy, I think, judging by some of the texts coming in. My peonies... My peonies buds is turning black.
Yes.
What can I do about that?
Sort of, probably the first thing to do is check for some peonies going like that. They're generally the 10, they're possibly even too wet. They may have been overwatered. There's sort of a fungus sets in. But just check for sort of the water level, make sure they're sort of thing. But they can be a fickle enough wild thing anyway, so they can.
Okay.
And once again, if you're in any doubt, take a couple of pictures. And bring it into your local garden centre.
What time of the year can I plant a large magnolia tree? Could you ask Paul, please?
Yeah, magnolia is supposed to actually... magnolias come out sort of February, March. But once a plant's in a pot, you can pot it any time of year. So the only time I'll tell you not
the
to do
the planting has really already happened, isn't it? If it's in a pot.
Pretty much, yeah, exactly.
The
only thing I would tell you not to do sort of month of July, August, because it's very dry and it's hard to establish plants. So, but pretty much any other time of year, you'd be perfect.
Is it too late to prepare my soil for the summer months now?
Absolutely not. It's perfect time. So it is.
Is mulch the same as compost?
Mulch and compost, they'd be sort of intertwined slightly in the sense.
So mulch is finely ground up grass, is it? No?
Pretty much. People can use different things like bark mulch.
Okay,
Use bark of trees. So generally a mulch is used to decorate the top of a bed or even to suppress weeds.
Mm.
Whereas compost is actually
a food
to actively grow in the thing. So like bark would work as a mulch, but it wouldn't work as a compost. Whereas compost can work as both.
All right, soil in pots. People might be taking them out now and the old soil is there. It looks quite dark brown. Looks good to go.
Yeah.
But how often should you replace soil in pots?
Replace soil in pots, I suppose it depends on the size of the pot.
Yeah.
Generally, and what you're intending to grow. Because if you're doing something like summer bedding, you want a good return out of them.
Mm.
So you need a good bit of nutrition. So replace, if it's a very large pot, I would leave about a third and replace two thirds. If it's a small pot, I would replace the whole lot.
And mix it or just leave
it? No, leave the stuff at the bottom.
Right, okay.
So it's just sort of, it's working as a sump to hold water more than actually having nutrients in it. But if you are redding them out, be very careful. Check around the rims and stuff for slug eggs. Something like that there.
All right. Should I plant in containers, garden beds or in the ground?
I suppose a very broad question.
Yeah.
It kind of depends what you're growing. Flowers are something to get if you're lacking space. Pots do work very well, and even for sort of herbs, vegetables, stuff like that. But if you have the space for them, garden beds are probably, you can grow sort of bigger, more impressive plants. But once again, be the thing, go into your garden centre and ask them what you intend to grow, and they could advise you on the best sort of spot for them.
And there's lots of people listening to us today that might live in a flat or an apartment or an upstairs section of a house that don't have any outdoor space. There's absolutely no reason why they can't get involved in some of what we're talking about. You know, if they've got a window or even just a small little balcony or something to add a little bit of colour and freshness to the house.
Funny, you can actually, even going back to the fruit trees there, you actually get fruit trees now geared towards balconies.
Yeah.
They have two varieties, the one for pollination, and they only get to about a metre high, but you will get a decent amount of fruit.
Right, cute too. All right. Which flowers last the longest in the summer?
Last longest in the summer, generally bedding plants like that there. If you're going perennials or someone on the ground, geums would be hard to beat. It's G-E-U-M. They're very good. The will flower from now right up to almost Halloween.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for someone for pots or baskets, if no one say towns or even around pubs there, you see the massive big baskets. They're all based in trailing petunias. which are sort of the star of the show for the summer.
Yeah.
So if you're doing up baskets, that day would be the direction it'd be going.
Yeah, but to maintain that longevity, regardless of whether it's the long-lasting ones or not, it does require deadheading and care, doesn't it?
Exactly. Sort of watering is key, obviously. If they're allowed to dry out a couple of times, it really takes the life out of them. So keep an eye on the watering, keep an eye on the deadheading, and you'll should get them right up to Halloween or after.
What's the best way to deal with the green foliage left after the daffodils have finished flowering?
Yes, common problem when everybody's tempted to mow them off, which is the wrong thing to do, because that's the energy from the sun has been stored in that greenery and it wants to find its way back down to the bulb again. So if you want to speed up the process, the odd way was just to tie a knot in them. It sort of takes the height down off them and makes them rot back down into the bulb a bit quicker.
Mm.
But no, just if you can avoid it at all, don't be tempted.
If you want them back for next year.
Exactly.
Okay. How do you clear invasive ivy?
Invasive ivy, once again, depends if it's on a wall or on a tree or something like that. The best thing to do is actually cut it off at the base, even with a saw or something like that, and actually leave it alone then for maybe a month or 6 weeks. The plant will actually die off and it'll become much looser to take off.
Yeah.
So it will.
Loses its grip.
Yeah, pretty much it loses its grip as it dies off. But even then, it can be a torture of a job.
Yeah, okay. And just back to the lawns finally. Mm-hmm. Can you get rid of moss on the lawn without raking it?
Generally, there is a sort of newish product that's been out the last couple of years. It's a product called Mobacter.
Mm-hmm.
You spread it on the lawn. It's sort of like a fungal element to it that eats up the moss. But I've used it before and it tends to work. It works okay if you have a very slight case of moss.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a heavy case of moss, it's not as
the
effective.
Moss wins.
Pretty much. Yeah. So, unfortunately, I doubt the old rake's the best.
All right. Best option. What's the buzz in garden centres across the region now? Are you starting to see people coming in?
Yeah, funny, the last 2 weeks since the good weather's come along, it's actually been very busy. Yeah. A lot of people just sort of doing their spring tidy up. It's been a wee bit late, if you know what I mean. And vegetables and all still a big thing, even sort of into tomato season. Strawberries and all is very, very popular at the minute. And in the next couple of weeks, then it'll be just all about the bedding plants.
Yeah, okay. And you have been working to get them ready for quite some time now.
Pretty much, they start the last week of March. We start getting the bedding plants ready.
Yeah.
And they're sort of continuously coming from that on. And there are some ready to go already. But for the most part, it's sort of into the middle of May, sort of prime time for them.
Excellent, okay. Listen, Paul, thanks very much as always. I really appreciate you calling up. And I think we got through pretty much, 95% of the questions that had come in. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you very much.
All right, that's Paul from Ballacdoor Garden Centre. We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after we take a break. Stay where you are. Okay, you're very welcome back to the show. On to it is Marion MacDonald, who is chair of Maville Tidy Towns. Good morning to you. Marion, thanks so much for taking the call.
Thank you, Greg.
Right, you went through a bit of a public consultation period recently, didn't you? And some interesting, if not maybe surprising, findings.
Yeah, that's quite true. The main finding was the dog found it. And it's just unbelievable. Every day, that you get people, we have a lovely shore path, and it's packed with people in wheelchairs, prams, walkers, and the dog fouling is just unbelievable. So we got funding from Pubble, and we have got all the things necessary, and we have got signs up all over the green reminding people to lift the other dog poo after them.
Yeah, and it's not just that. There's signage being erected, as you mentioned, waste bags, which of course have to be disposed of responsibly as well. You're trying everything here in terms of trying to persuade people to do the right thing.
That's right. Yeah, that's true.
And it's probably only just a handful of irresponsible dog owners, if that, who are responsible for this, because we know the majority of dog owners are very responsible.
Yeah, well, we find that all the time. We have a lot of responsible dog owners, but then you get the odd person in that comes and they're just not responsible at all.
All right, so where are these dog bags available? Because they've been made free for a while, haven't they? Or at least they've been made available.
They're available beside the new play park in Mobile at the entrance to the green, and then there's all that was over there at Lafferty's Lane. And there's bins, disposable bins for these bags as well.
So when was this all launched, Marion?
It was just at our meeting the other night.
Right, okay. So a lot of this has to be put in place yet, does it?
Well, everything is available now in the resource centre in Mobile, and then we meet every Saturday morning at 8:30. And we meet outside the Cozy Cottage or at the resource centre, and anybody wants anything or wants to help us in any way is quite free to come along.
All right. But it might take a wee while, I suppose, before we find out if these initiatives actually fix the dog fouling problem, particularly in the Shore Path and Bath Green areas.
Yeah, that's quite true. People like to go for a walk and look at the scenery, but you're looking down at your feet all the time on the path. Mm. The way the fouling is, it's terrible.
And listen, we don't need to remind people, but buggies, people with a wheelchair, a walking stick, or a cane—that's
quite true.
You know,
yeah,
we know how to discuss or get it on your shoes. It's horrendous, and it's harmful, particularly to young people. Also, though, the Leave No Trace Behind campaign—that's for general waste too, I presume. Is it, Marion?
That's quite true. Yeah, that's for general waste.
All right. And anything else from this? Anything else from this consultation process that jumped back out at you in terms of concerns
actually,
people
really,
have?
It was mostly the dog fouling. That was the main thing. Mm. You know. So if we tackle that now, and we can see how it goes. But like we have a water park in Mobile, and they come from all over Donegal and all over Northern Ireland. You know, to the water park, and they'll be on the green. And there's nothing worse than the dog fouling.
Yeah, and it should be a place where you can throw a blanket down or just sit down or walk.
That's quite true. Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you shouldn't.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a minefield of dog poo in this day and age.
There's plenty of seats on the green. Like we have replaced all the seating in the green this year.
Brilliant.
And it's all recycled plastic. You know, and there's not, you know, surely people can put their rugs down and all like that. But there's plenty sitting on the green as well.
And how many of the sort of the core membership that it's doing all this great work in the area, Marion?
There's 10 of us.
Wow.
But then we have other people. We have a lot of pensioners that come out. We have Lawrence and Ernie that come out every Saturday and do a clean up. You know, they're in their 80s. But we have a lot of people that that would come out as well. But really, if everybody looked after their own, we would have no bother.
I know, but look, we've been trying to convince people of that for a long time, Marion. And you mentioned, too, that volunteers are always welcome. So talk to me about when everyone can meet up.
Well, we're there every Saturday morning from 8:30. And they're bound to see us about the town.
Yes.
You know, we clean the town every Saturday morning, maybe two or three times a week, but always on the Saturday morning.
Fair play. And it's the in terms of the rubbish, it's the pointless stuff like takeaway boxes, plastic bottles.
That's the main
The stuff that people should take home and put in their bin for crying out loud.
Yeah. We find a lot of people in cars and just throwing everything out the window.
Beggars belief, doesn't it?
That's quite true, yeah.
You know, and then people like yourself and others, and the two gentlemen you mentioned, having to go out early mornings at the weekend and pick up the stuff they've just threw out their window on a Friday night. It's crazy.
Yeah. There are 10 of us go out every, the committee go out every Saturday morning, and then you would maybe have the volunteers, but, you know.
Yeah. But progress is being made all the while. You've talked about what's being made. There was an initiative too, wasn't there, as it relates to making people think twice about the use of takeaway coffee cups. That's had an impact, has it?
Yeah. Oh, that was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. We had the coffee cups. The people are still using them. And then when they go into a coffee shop, they get 10% off their coffee.
Yeah. All right, okay. And I think I saw in a post too that while you do great work as well, you were quick to thank other groups in and around Mobile for what they've done, particularly in the Leave No Trace Ireland campaign.
That's quite true. And the community college and the schools, everyone helps out, and the Gaelic and the soccer clubs, everybody helps out and everything.
Great stuff. Is there a competition running at the moment, finally?
Yeah, there is. There's a painting competition. I forget now. It's an Irish name. I forget just what it is. It was distributed around the schools yesterday.
Brilliant stuff. There's colouring categories 4 to 8.
That's quite
to create a poster, 8 to 12, an awareness leaflet, 12 to 18. And competition entrance, if you did get one of those flyers, must be submitted by 5 p.m. on the 19th of May and can be given to a Mobile Tidy Towns volunteer or handed into Mobile Library and Mobile District Family Resource Centre. So a bit of fun there as well.
Yeah, that's quite true. It gets everyone involved.
All right, keep up the great work, Marion. And we just ask people in and around Mobile and every other town and village and the countryside, please pick up after your dogs.
That's great, Greg. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye, Marion. It's been nice speaking to you. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye. Right, okay. We were speaking, and we have a couple of times, on this programme, and we spoke to Deputy Burke about his concerns about codeine usage, and the direction of traffic seems to be that the products are going to be banned. Margaret O'Doherty is a regular guest on the show of Rafo Pharmacy, and she joins us on the programme now. Margaret, thanks for taking the call today.
Good to talk to you as always, Greg.
Yeah, what's your reaction been to this conversation we've been having about the amount of prescriptions for codeine-contained products and people's over-reliance on them? I mean, you're at the coalface. Talk to me about your reaction to the conversation that's been happening.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I didn't hear your conversation with Deputy Burke, so I can't comment on that. But certainly some of the headlines we've seen over the last couple of days have been quite worrying for people who are taking these medications and who have been prescribed them by their doctors for very good reasons. A lot of people are suffering. They suffer from chronic pain. They suffer from acute pain. They need to have pain relief, and they need to have safe and effective pain relief. Mm-hmm. And that's why they go to their doctor, and that's why they get a prescription for it. So it's worrying for them when they see headlines suggesting that, you know, everybody's addicted to these drugs, which just isn't the case.
Yeah, so codeine or the tablets that people might be taking, it becomes like a dirty word, and they think they've got a problem when actually they're being properly prescribed a medicine that they need.
Exactly. I mean, there is a stigma with taking any medicine, and people don't take painkillers, you know, for what they don't have a reason to take them. People do suffer from, there's a lot of chronic pain out there, mm-hmm. particularly with long waiting lists for operations, waiting lists to see physiotherapists. The only option that doctors have to offer them is, in most cases, a painkiller, and in many cases, codeine is the most appropriate painkiller for them. And in that case, they don't need to be, you know, having added worry about, will I be able to get medication that is working for me and it's helping me?
Yeah. Are there separate groups of people, and maybe you can sort of give us an idea, Margaret, like there are those, are there not, though, that perhaps their pain has eased and they feel they're reliant on codeine tablets and will continue to go for a prescription? That's one group. A, they may exist or not, you'll let me know. And B, people that have a dependency on the over-the-counter tablets that do contain codeine. There, for some people, is there an issue that we need to look at then, but at the same time not make people feel like criminals for taking tablets that they actually need?
Exactly. I mean, there's no doubt that codeine is an addictive medicine. If you are taking it for a long time, some people become dependent on it. Not everybody, but like any medicine that has addictive properties, particularly people that have addictive tendencies or that are addicted to other substances, they can find that when their pain is eased, when they've had their operation and they try to reduce their painkillers, that, you know, they have a dependency on it. And that's something, again, those people need help with that. And often we don't have the services for them to help that. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard work for both the patient and for their doctor and for their pharmacist to gradually reduce their usage of it. But, you know, that doesn't mean that you just sort of say, no, you can't have it anymore. You have to deal with that problem and deal with it usually on a long-term basis. There isn't a quick fix for it.
Yeah, and I think your intervention is a timely and important one because, you know, we don't want people who are taking codeine because they need to for pain and then start worrying about, well, am I addicted to this, and then stop taking it, or for their life to be disrupted for no good reason because of some of the headlines that are out there. And maybe in our conversation with Deputy Burke, we contributed to that. I did have the conversation with him, though, not exactly what you're saying, but along the lines of that, you know, this needs to be talked through as to what's going on. And if we are phasing out the over-counter sale of it, how we do it, if there are people that rely on them. But anyway, listen, let me just get back to the core question. We don't want people in pain to stop taking these because they might fear they're addicts or something.
No, I mean, if you have been prescribed something by your GP, your doctor didn't give it to you without having a good reason to give it to you. And if you feel that you're taking too much of it, or that maybe that it's not working for you, I mean, that's a conversation you need to have with your doctor. It's not something that you need your neighbours or your friends talking to you about. You need to talk to a health professional about it.
I think really the core situation we're in here as well too, though, is the over-the-counter stuff. Like, do you believe codeine, tablets that contain codeine, should be prescription only? Do you think there is a problem with people dependent on the I think it's Nurofen Plus might be the most popular brand, who go in and buy them in the pharmacy? Do you think they should be prescription only?
Well, I mean, at present, the situation with the over-the-counter medicines is that they are for acute pain, for short-term use. And certainly there are people who use them long-term because either they have an addiction to them or because they do find that they're very effective for their pain. So again, just making them prescription only in a situation where we already have very difficult access to doctors, whether it's hard to get appointments. You know, it's not always easy if you have a toothache on a Saturday. You know, you're not going to say to somebody, well, you need to go and get a prescription to deal with that. You know, you have to have some means of helping people in acute pain. But what the best solution is something that's going to have to be worked out over the long term. Not, you know, we can't do it just overnight.
And when we talk about the addiction that people might have, how does that present itself, Margaret? Do you know, like, how do people know that it is these tablets that they feel they need to take in the case where there is that there is an addiction there? Is it if they don't have them for a while, do they feel off, or how do you know how that presents itself?
Well, I mean, any addiction is that if you try to stop taking something, you get physical and psychological effects. Mm. Your body tells you that you need this medicine, and your mind tells you that you need it. You need your fix, so to speak. So that's how people are affected, and they will go to quite extreme methods to get hold of whatever it is they're addicted to. Mm-hmm. No more than an alcoholic will do their best to get hold of alcohol and do whatever it takes to get hold of it. Mm. So they'll, you know, people will come in with stories about fictitious illnesses or pains that they have, that they need this medicine. People will forge prescriptions. People will go to doctors and try to get prescriptions. So all that does happen. But those people are the minority. They're not everybody that's taking the medicine. There are a small minority who do need help.
But that being said, though, Margaret, can we ignore, and I know you're not ignoring, I mean, can we as a society ignore the statistics which show there's been a 22% increase in the number of prescriptions for medicines containing codeine in 10 years? Last year, 1.1 million prescriptions for the pain relief and codeine drug were issued through the public medical schemes last year. So that's not all of it. You know, we are a population of, you know, 5+ million. Is that not a very, very high figure that would point to, or else there is an incredible amount of people living with chronic pain in this country? It's one or other.
Well, it's both. I mean, to be honest with you, a lot of people do live with chronic pain, and the fact that our health service isn't able to deal promptly with people who are in pain, who are suffering from arthritis, who need hip replacements, who need other forms of care. You know, they've had their operations postponed. Those people have to have pain relief, and that's driving. In my opinion, that's what the biggest driver of the increase in demand for pain relief. And when you talk to people, yes, they'll tell you that's why they need it.
Okay, a caller probably sums up much of what we've been talking about here. I agree with Margaret. It's not fair to be tarred as an addict when I'm living in constant pain.
And I don't think those of us who, you know, might have an occasional pain, you might get a toothache or a pulled muscle or something, and you know how horrible that pain is. But I don't think we can understand what it's like for people who waking up every morning, who possibly don't sleep at night because they have pain, be it from a road traffic accident, a work accident, a farm accident. you know, people live for years, decades with that chronic pain, and they have to learn to manage it. Mm. And most of them have figured out their own way of doing it. They don't talk about it. They often don't, you know, because they know that nobody really wants to listen to what it's like for them. So it's very hard for those people when they have figured out some way of just about coping to then have a suggestion that their mechanism is going to be pulled away from them.
Yeah, and I suppose these headlines lead to questions like this as well. If prescribed codeine and have never took it before, would Margaret recommend taking it or trying an alternative? Now, they've been prescribed codeine by their doctor, so presumably the advice, Margaret, would be to take it then, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if there was an alternative, I presume your doctor would have given it to you, or you would have tried it already. Very few people get codeine, you know, certainly not regularly for as a first line. It is a second line treatment for people who haven't responded to other forms of treatment, or that they're not available for them.
I was prescribed a drug, methotrexate, for rheumatoid arthritis. On the fifth day, I passed out in my bathroom. As a result, the doctor prescribed sulfadine for pain for hip replacement pending in the future. Now what, they say?
Well, exactly. I mean, that's a person who obviously needs adequate pain relief. And I mean, it's not fair to frighten those people. It will still be available to them.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
I agree.
I mean, there's no question about it being taken off the market completely or anything like that. And that's a fear that, you know, I don't want people getting that idea. There may be restrictions. It may be slightly more difficult to get it, but certainly the people who need it will still be able to get it.
And even the deputy himself, who surprisingly didn't know, he's been on a health committee for years, didn't know about its availability in the north or not. But anyway, hopefully they brief themselves on
that. That doesn't surprise me at all.
I just hope that if they are making these decisions, that they actually brief themselves on really obvious stuff like that. But be that as it may.
Certainly, I mean, if we saw restrictions here, you would see people travelling to the north, travelling to Britain, going to wherever they can get the stuff. I mean, already people travel to the north because it is more easily available over the counter than it is here.
Yeah, okay. So, as I say, I hope they know all of that stuff before they make decisions. And also, he did say that it's probably going to take quite some time. I have a feeling we'll talk about this for a little while and then it'll go off the agenda again. My daughter was on Sulfadol for a broken bone and had a bad reaction to the codeine. It made her very sick and affected her liver. But again, obviously, that's something you go back to your GP with and they look for an alternative, I presume.
Exactly. I mean, like any medicine, it doesn't suit everybody. And you have to find what works for you. And for some people, it will be codeine-containing medicines. For other people, it won't be.
Okay. Right, okay. Thanks for bringing a little bit of balance that conversation. And it's noted to myself, I think, for future conversations I have on this as well, Margaret. So that's the importance, I think. Thank you for chatting to us and just giving us a different view on it. It's very much welcome.
Not at all. You're welcome anytime, Greg.
As always, of course, Margaret, you're a wealth of knowledge. Thanks very much indeed. Margaret O'Doherty there, who is a pharmacist and regular contributor here to this programme as a panellist on our Friday panel. And as I say, always seems to talk sense. OK, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. It's great to have you on board listening and some of you watching, of course. We really appreciate that. And just don't forget, if you miss any of the show and you want to listen back, we podcast the programme on our website, highlandradio.com, every day. We split it up into 3 hours for ease for you. And also you can watch it back on our YouTube or Facebook channel. So no excuses to miss a thing. Right, a caller says, I think the ball was dropped on codeine. Anyone can become dependent, and it's important we recognise more addictive medications. Indeed. So also, we've been having the conversation on social media. Communion season, of course, right upon us. Costly one-day affair is the question. Elaine said, my children donated a third of their communion money they received on the day to Mary's Meals, and that was their choice. Well, what fine children you've raised. Fair play. Greg, I put €10 in cards for my grandchildren. My friends do the same. I don't agree with putting any more in cards. Kids are bragging at school and about getting €50 and more. I think 10 is perfectly fine. And do you know what? if 10 is not enough, well, they the kids need a reality check, because life gets tough as you get older and there isn't always an abundance of money, is there? I think you're a very generous grandmother. I think 10's a nice amount. This caller says communions are now turning into mini weddings with many, not all, trying to outdo each other with the style, the party, the entertainment, the presents. I just wonder to myself how much emphasis is put on the actual meaning of receiving the sacrament of First Holy Communion as it puts into organising the actual event. That's only my opinion. Well, I think, I was going to say, I remember. It's that blooming long ago since I was going through that ritual in school. Not ritual, do you know what I mean? That sounds like I'm being condescending or something, but I'm not. There was a big focus on the religious side of it. And of course, then parents at home, if it's their will, also have a role to play too, don't they? We can't leave it all up to the teachers who've got loads of different classes to fit in. I just like the idea, you know, with people recently making the confirmations and what have you, whereby it's done in the school uniform and then everybody is equal and it removes that competition. And communion's different in that it's an important big day and people want to be able to dress up. I don't know. But anyway, let us know what you think. 086 60 25,000. I just like us all sort of being equal. And I just remember back when we were going to school, you know, even then there was great competition and we didn't have, I mean, we were well looked after, don't get me wrong. But, you know, there was lots of hand-me-downs and all stuff like that there. And you would be sort of not picked on, but being seen as different for not having the same clothes someone else might have. Tidy town stuff and general environment. A group and I volunteer to clean up the Gorter Hawk area, and at least three times a week there are takeaway bags, containers and food waste on the side of the road. It's extremely disheartening. I'm from Crawley. I go for a walk every day. There are dogs roaming freely and their owners do not care to watch them, firstly, and secondly, clean up after them. And I talked before about being on beaches and dogs running wild and pooing everywhere, and I don't know, it's not the majority, it's a minority, but people seem to think that their dogs run the place. I don't know what the story is there. Some people, a small amount, okay? I'm not anti-dog owners or anything. Please don't get me wrong. But what about then the role of takeaways in all of this then? Is there a role for them? What could be done? Because time and time again, it's the curry, you know, those silver curry trays or the bags or the burger boxes or whatever it might be. We've got hundreds and hundreds of fantastic volunteers that are going around every weekend having to pick this stuff up. You know, what could or should takeaways, fast food joints be doing to help, even in an awareness or the type of boxes or number plates on the boxes? And they have to be able to play a role, don't they? John is on watching us on Facebook. He said, well said, Margaret, indeed. And I just want to say good morning to Kathleen. Good morning to you. Thank you very much for watching with us here. Liz, commenting on the situation at Letterkenny University Hospital. Liz says that man's right. It's the management in the hospital that needs to sort this out. There has to be change. Celia also commenting, fair play to that man for speaking out about the hospital. Hilda, where are RTDs to answer on how bad Letterkenny Hospital is? Good morning to you, Charlie, as well, back watching in Edinburgh, having spent 4 weeks in Gwydor, blessed with the weather, he tells us. Beth, good morning to you as well. Anita, hope you have a great day. Thank you very much for joining us. Annie is there as well, as is Paul, often first to comment in the mornings. Paul, a very good morning to you as well. Caller says the three lights are still out on the main road outside Red Door in Farn. It will soon be 2 years and still waiting. Is there anyone you know who could sort these out? Thank you. Now, I'm not familiar with the Red Door's actually somewhere where I want to go, I think, if it's the same place I'm thinking of. But the lights are out in Farn. What's going out? Are these public lights, street lights? Leave that with us. We'll chase that up. So it is three streetlights. If you can text back, just give us a little bit more detail and we can certainly try and sort that out for you. A caller says, if the nurses and doctors and consultants said today we have had enough, we can't stick this any longer, what would happen then? Forget about spending 10 million euro on a project in Ballybuffet that's not going to benefit anyone really, other than people who have time on their hands to sit on benches and look around themselves. The health system is falling around falling down around us. And then there is money that's received from government spent on silly stuff. Get the priorities sorted first, then spend money on the non-necessary stuff. Now, I get exactly what you're saying, okay? But you can't think for one moment if that development in Ballybuffet were to not go ahead, that that money would be spent on the hospital. It's like the housing crisis and what we're doing in terms of housing refugees or what have you. Not doing that doesn't mean houses get built. Not building this new open space in Ballybuffet doesn't mean the hospital gets sorted. The country's awash with money, we're told, and yet still the money or the the will can't be found to fix the problems. So as I say, not progressing what's happening in Ballybuffet, would not impact the hospital. There's enough money for both. I drive a 151 diesel car, says this listener. My mechanic, who has over 60 years of experience, stuck his fingers into the exhaust pipes and both of them came out as clean as they went in. The mechanic looked at me and said, where's your pollution there? Would love to know everyone else's thoughts on this. Okay, well, I would bow to the authority of your mechanic, but it's the particles that you can't see that are the ones that are apparently most damaging. A caller says, I remember a few years ago asking in a pharmacy for a bottle of cough mixture with codeine, costing perhaps around €5, they say. It required a doctor's prescription. I then had to drive over a 30 round trip, I'm not sure if that's miles or minutes, paid over €50 for a doctor's prescription, and then went to buy the cough mix. The cost would soften any cost. Now, I don't know how long ago that is or what that was, but an interesting story nonetheless. A caller says, I would rather stay sick at home than go to the ED. I'm actually quite emotional about it. Please, I understand where you're coming from, but in us trying to highlight people's concerns and experiences in a snapshot of time, I would never want it to discourage anyone going to the ED if they were sick. So please, if you do feel you need the hospital, get along to it. And finally, let's finish off with a request. Can you play a request for Seamus and Susan Martin in Drumna Craig, Fannet, who are celebrating their 25th wedding anniversary today? Enjoy the day. Lots of love from Una and Kathleen. Okay, thanks to Niamh and Donna Marie working on the show. Thanks to you for listening. We're back with you tomorrow morning with the Friday panel from 9. Tune in for that.